Matasha,
of one who is bewildered.
Veneshu,
in forests.
Api, even. Shat, there must be. Yataha,
because.
Saha,
he, one who is not self-controlled.
Aste,
existing.
Saha,
with.
Sat sapatnaha,
six co-wives.
Jitta indriyasya,
for one who has already conquered the senses.
Atmavratahe,
self-satisfied.
Vudasya,
for such a learned man.
Graha ashamaha,
household life.
Kim,
what?
Nu,
indeed.
Karoti,
can do.
Avadyam,
harm. Translation. Even if he goes from forest to forest, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage because he is living with six co-wives, the mind and knowledge-acquiring senses. Even household life, however, cannot harm a self-satisfied, learned man who has conquered the senses. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Śrīla Narottama Dasa Thakura is sung, Grihe Vavanete Take Agoranga Bale Take. Whether one is situated in the forest or at home, if he's engaged in the devotional service of Lord Chaitanya, he is a liberated person. Here, this is also repeated. For one who has not controlled his senses, going to the forest to become a so-called yogi is meaningless. Because his uncontrolled mind and senses are going with him, he cannot achieve anything, even by giving up household life and staying in the forest. Formerly, many mercantile men from the upcountry of India used to go to Bengal, and thus there is a familiar saying, if you go to Bengal, your fortune will go with you. Our first concern, therefore, should be to control the senses. And since the senses cannot be controlled unless engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, our most important duty is to engage the senses in devotional service. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhaktir, Uchite. Bhakti means engagement of the purified senses in the service of the Lord. Herein, Lord Brahma indicates that instead of going to the forest with uncontrolled senses, it is better or more secure to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Even household life can do no harm to a self-realized person or self-controlled person acting in this way. It cannot force him into material bondage. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī has further enunciated this position. Iha yasya harer dashe karmana manasa gita nikalashvapi avastasu jivan mukta suchate. Regardless of one's circumstances, if one fully engages his activities, mind, and words in the devotional service of the Lord, he should be understood to be a liberated person. Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura was a responsible officer and a householder, yet his service to the cause of expanding the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is unique. Śrīla Prabhupādananda Saraswati Thakura says, Durdan Tendriya Kala Sarpa Patali Prabhkata Damstrayate. The sense organs are certainly our greatest enemies, and they are therefore compared to venomous serpents. However, if a venomous serpent is bereft of its poisonous fangs, it is no longer fearful. The fangs mean the teeth, you know, come out of the serpent. Similarly, if the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, there is no need to fear their activities. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement move within this material world, but because their senses are fully engaged in the service of the Lord, they are always aloof from the material world. They are always living in a transcendental position. Okay. Vayam pramathasya vaneshvapishad yatasaste saha shatsapatnaha jitendriyasyatma rater buddhasya rahasyamakim kutnu karotya bhajam. Okay. Om Gana, Timidanda Shah, Gananjana, Shalakaya Chakshuram, Miditam, Yena Tasmai, Shigurve Namaha. So, if you notice, while I was reading the word by word synonyms, and I specifically noted or felt that it was humorous to read the word Saputnaha. So, Saputnaha, there's two ways to understand this word. It's a very interesting word. Sa means with, Patnaha means wife, like Patni. Like in the Vedic system, the husband would call the wife Patni. And the husband would be called Pati, Pati Dev. I remember there was one couple that wife would always be calling the husband Pati Dev. And at that time, not many people had email, so he was traveling with me. And he was using my email, and I would get these letters, Dear Pati Dev. And I would say, that letter is not for me, it's for you. So anyway, so Patni means wife, but also another meaning of this word, Sapatni, Sapatnaha, means enemy, or with one's enemy. That means, it basically means co-wife, or basically with one's enemy, which is very interesting. So in other words, the understanding based on this particular verse and purport is that it's very dangerous to have many wives. And there's many examples of this in the Vedic system. I mean, several of them come to mind. Of course, perhaps the foremost example is this Chitraketu. You've all heard of Chitraketu. Chitraketu didn't have just several wives. He had 10 million wives. That's a lot. And what's the population of Croatia? 4.5 million. Yeah. So it's like more than double the population of Croatia. Can you imagine traveling everywhere in Croatia and everywhere is your wife? I mean, it'd be a disaster area, you know. Enough to get you to commit suicide. Anyway, so this Chitraketu, as many kings did, wanted to have a son. As we mentioned in previous classes, the reason for having a son, or the son can be can perform this pinda and help you after this lifetime. It's very important in the Vedic system to have a son. Anyway, so he was trying. He had one wife tried, two wives tried, three wives tried, and I guess it went all the way up to 10 million. And no son came. And so, you know, finally he got blessings. You shall have a son named Harsha Shoka. Harsha means like happiness and lamentation, basically. Happiness and lamentation. Or lamentation and happiness. And so he was so happy to hear that he was going to have a son. He didn't even analyze the words, happiness and lamentation. He just thought, Jai, I'm going to have a son. Because it was waiting for a long time. 10 million wives means a long time. So what happened is that he did have a son. A nice little cute little Harsha Shoka. And what happened with the son is that 9,999,999 of the wives weren't too happy with the whole affair. Because one of the wives was the one who was the mother. The other ones were not the mother. So they got envious, poisoned the kid. Kid died, right? And then Narada Muni came, and he had the son speak for a little bit of philosophy like that. And Chitraketu, at that point, learned his lesson. And after that, he went on Sankirtan. His Sankirtan party was quite unusual. He traveled in one of these, like, celestial airplanes with a whole bunch of ladies, but they weren't his wives. So he learned his lesson. Only one wife, anyway, after that point. Anyway, and then there's the whole story. He got cursed by Parvati, became the demon, isn't it? Ritrasura. Anyway, that's not part of the class today, that story. In any case, there's one example. Another example, I mean, we'll give another two examples, is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, he was the son of King Uttanapada. King Uttanapada had two wives, Suniti and Suruchi. And actually the names are very significant. Just like you have one of the stages in the advancement of devotional service is called Ruchi, right? Ruchi means what? To have a taste. So Suruchi means like good taste. Like, anyway, like Sudharma. I mean, there's so many names like that. Subhadra, isn't it? Anyways, it's very interesting how the names mean something in the Vedic system. So, in other words, he really had a taste. Anyway, he was attracted to her, controlled by her. And so what happened is that Dhruva Maharaj happened to get up on King Uttanapada's lap, and Suruchi, his stepmother, you always hear about the evil stepmothers, said, "You better get down, buddy, because you have to be born from my womb to actually take birth, to actually sit on your father's lap. And, you know, you better, next life, see you next life." And so the king didn't say anything. Why didn't he say anything? Because he was afraid of aggravating his wife. Because she was Suruchi. He loved her. Anyway, he was attached. That's also significance of this word used in the verses, pramatasya. Pramatasya means not only one who is bewildered, one who is extremely bewildered. And association between men and women, are, specifically the woman is sometimes called for the man, mada, or someone who bewilders you or makes... I mean, in English you could say someone who makes you mad, right? I'm not speaking against women here, I'm just saying, don't worry. Just like in science nowadays, they've analyzed when you have the attraction between men and women. I've spoken this before, but you can hear it again. This is a warning. It's the same physiologically as when one takes cocaine. You've heard me say that before? No. Well, it's for some of you who need to hear it. And for the men and the women. It's like they've done brain scans, and then the brain scan comes out exactly the same as when one is snorting cocaine. So obviously when one is snorting cocaine, one's judgment is severely impaired, isn't it? So when you're in love, your judgment is severely impaired. I would say you're crazy. So the Prabhupada defines this word pramada or pramatasya as mad, or, you know, just an illusion. Basically not mad in the sense of like schizophrenia or anything, but just in complete illusion. And pramada means prakriti rupena jayate. That means completely an illusion. I mean, completely. Like the verse given by Lord Rishavade, Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma, Yad Indriya Priti Aparanoti. Any of you heard this verse? Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma. Those who actually, Yad Indriya Priti, those who actually consider their senses to be very pritya, dear. There's like the word priya means dear. I mean, a husband will sometimes call his wife Priya in Hindi. In English, they say, my dear. They do that here? What's the word here? Drava?
Draga.
Draga. How do you say my draga?
Moy draga.
Moy draga. And that's similar to the English word dragon. Anyway, so... My dragon. Anyways, I'm sorry, I can't resist that joke. Anyway, so... Nunam pramada priya, yadindriya priya, one who actually can priya, one who considers the senses very dear, satisfaction of the senses very important, and this is actually the topic of this verse too. Nunam pramada kuda, he commits all sorts of crazy activities. That means vikarmic activities, activities which go against the shastras. Nunam pramada kurute vikarma. Anyway, Lord Rishabhadev describes this. So, getting back to the story, so you have Dhruva Maharaj's father who just didn't want to say anything. In other words, when one's mind is bewildered, one loses his honesty. Honesty is very important. What does honesty mean? Speak truthfully, act truthfully. Right? Not only do you speak truthfully, you know. Actually, sometimes people can speak truthfully, appear to be speaking truthfully, but they're not telling you everything. It's a trick. Just like, oh, anyway, I don't know if I should give that example. I'm not going to give that example. It's too heavy. So, I'll give the example. There used to be a president of the United States. And he was asked if he had an illicit relationship with someone. And he said no. And it turned out he did, but what he meant by illicit relationship was different than what other people mean by illicit relationship. You understand what I mean. So there's a way to tell the truth without telling the truth. Or to follow the letter of the law, as they say, without following the spirit of the law. Anyway, so... Truthfulness is very important. So when one's attached to things, when one is, controlled by wealth or by sense gratification, then one can no longer speak the truth. That's why a real Brahmana has to really take a vow of austerity. Because if a Brahmana takes employment, in other words, he gets a salary, he can't really tell the truth anymore, at least at work, right? Because if you tell the truth, let's say your boss at work is really obnoxious. Can you tell him you're obnoxious? I don't think so. You'll lose your job. So you're really constrained. A Brahmin gets constrained by taking employment. Anyway, I know in the material world we have to take employment. That's another thing. I'm not criticizing anything. So this king, Uttanapada, he couldn't speak up. Poor little Dhruva was just kicked off of his lap. And so that's another instance of like co-wives being enemies, right? The third instance we'll tell about is of course the famous incident in the co-wives of King Dasarath. King Dasarath, of course, is the father of Lord Ramchandra, and Lord Ramchandra's brothers, and Dasarath had three wives. And one of them was named Kaikeyi. And Kaikeyi became, under the influence of this nurse, Mantura, she became envious of Lord Ramchandra. And she created all these problems, so Lord Ramchandra was exiled in the forest. So that's why this example is given. That if one has uncontrolled senses, he's fearful, and it's just like having many wives. That's explaining the example. So the idea is to control the senses, and as Srila Prabhupada comments here in this purport, that there's no detriment to one being in the household order of life to be able to control the senses. And to be able to control the senses, very simple, you need positive engagement in Krishna consciousness. As we've spoken many times before in the seminars we give, you can't do a negative. It's impossible to do a negative. In other words, you can't do a don't. I mean, so many times we concentrate in our preaching on the negatives, but it really doesn't help us that much. Even though we do have the restrictions, we have the four regulated principles, right? When I last checked. Four regulated, is that right? No? Yes. Just like we were talking in our seminar about the five regulated principles of Tantra. Does anyone remember those five regulated principles? It's exactly the opposite of our regulated principles. Who you remember? What are they?
To have illicit sex.
The worst possible.
Yeah. To eat the meat and all kinds of animals.
Yeah, meat. That there's maitunya. That oh, you remember too. You're going to be expert at this tantric behavior after a while. So, mamsa, maitunya. Matsya, eat fish. What else?
Mada.
Namada,
no.
Mudra. Mudra means you make obscene gestures with your hands. You can guess what that is. And mada, yeah, there's mada, which means the final one, which means intoxication. You drink plenty of liquor. So those are positive injunctions. They're not negative. I mean, it's kind of nice. So, of course, we have our negative injunctions. Don't eat meat, fish, or eggs. Don't take intoxication. Don't have illicit sex. And don't gamble. So, I prefer to phrase them or understand them in a positive sense rather than thinking of things that you can't do. You know, for example, don't take intoxication. So, we have a positive thing. For all of them, the positive thing is that we want to be cultivating the mode of goodness, the transcendental mode of goodness, and all these activities that are mentioned there entangle one in the mode of ignorance, basically. These are all mode of ignorance activities, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. And as Krishna says, karanam gunasangasya sadasa janma jonisha, the cause of our entanglement in this world is association with modes of nature. Right? We mentioned that before. So that's why we follow the regular principle. Now, each individually can be analyzed too. You know, instead of just putting in the negative, you know, no illicit sex, we can say the devotees can have sex life for children and married life. No intoxication, you can become intoxicated. How? By the holy name in kirtan. No gambling? Any ideas about that one? No. The positive thing is have faith in Krishna. Do things you're sure of. Don't take chances or do things that you're sure of. And no meat, fish, or eggs. That's easy. Just eat prasadam. Eat prasadam, chant, and be free. So if you put these things in the positive rather than the negative, it actually they become much more pleasant, easy to follow. And even the 10 offenses we do that with. 10 offenses? You recite them every morning, I think. That's what you're saying. Because I can't understand Croatian, you know. I don't know what you're saying, but I think it's the 10 offenses. So just like the 10 offenses, like instead of saying, don't blaspheme the devotees of the Lord, then serve the devotees of the Lord. Praise the devotees of the Lord, right? Instead of saying, don't consider the names of the demigods. Like Lord Shiva, independent. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, equal to independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Understand the holy name of Lord Vishnu is Krishna himself, and everybody is subservient to him. So there's different ways. I don't want to go through all the 10 offenses. I've done that sometimes during the initiation ceremony. But there's different ways to put things in the positive rather than the negative. And then it becomes much, much easier to deal with. So as far as controlling the senses, then instead of saying just control your senses, engage your senses like a child. If the child is doing something that's really counterproductive for your happiness and its happiness, or his happiness or her happiness, then instead of saying stop it, say wouldn't you like to do this? Right? Those of you who are parents, soon to be, hopefully, or used to be parents, or whatever. or don't want to be parents. Anyway, so there's different varieties here. There's people who used to be parents, people who want to be parents, people who don't want to be parents, people who became parents without wanting to be parents. Anyway, so there's different varieties in this world. I mean, if you go through all the permutations, it's quite interesting. So anyway, so when you're dealing with children, that's what you do. You substitute behavior, something better. Instead of saying, sit in the corner there and just look at the wall. Did your parents ever do that to you? Yeah. In the corner. Go in the corner. How long did you last there in the corner? 5 minutes. And then what happened then? Then you read. Instead, just give them something positive to do. So the same thing with the senses. Give the senses something positive to do, then it becomes very easy. And renunciation, according to Srila Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami, who was quoted here, renunciation becomes automatic. That's nirbandha krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya bhuchate. Isn't it? Rapancha katya bhujya hari sambandha bhashtuna. This is a famous verse. That mumukshvi parjagi vairagyam phalgu katyate. If one simply gives up things, Rupa Goswami says his renunciation is phalgu vairagya. Phalgu, in one sense, means false. Also refers to a river in India called the Phalgu River, which is a dry, apparently a dry river. And then when you go under the sand, the river, the water is still there. So in the same way, when someone appears to be renounced just by giving up things in a negative sense, the desires are still there. The what's called the papa bija, the seed of desire, is still there. And that remains until you actually fry the seed with devotional service. Okay, so these are some points. So any questions or comments? Yes. What makes preaching powerful? First of all, it's Krishna Katha. And it's the Yuga Dharma, you know. Krishna Nama Sankirtan. Kali Kalara Dharma. Krishna Nama Sankirtan. Krishna Shakti Vanana. Hey, Kare Pravartana. You're performing the Yuga Dharma by preaching. Another explanation is, as Krishna says in the Gita, no one is more dear to me than he who preaches this Krishna consciousness. Of course, he says to devotees, but everybody's a devotee in a larger sense. So you're doing something that's pleasing Krishna to the utmost, highest degree. And another explanation is that Krishna's feeling great anxiety because of the souls in the conditioned world, and then we're relieving Krishna's anxiety by preaching Krishna consciousness. Anyway, so many explanations like that. Krishna says, no one is more dear to me, nor will there ever be one more dear to me than he who teaches this Krishna consciousness. Right? But the proof of the preaching is in the pudding, as they say. Prabhupada said, actually Prabhupada was commenting, one devotee wrote Prabhupada, I'm going and giving so many lectures at the universities. And then Prabhupada replied, what is the use of your lectures? That's pretty heavy. Unless someone surrenders and becomes a devotee, or at least takes a book and gives a donation. So the proof that the preaching is pleasing to Krishna is the results. You know, what happens? I mean, you can speak, and have no jai shishigor natai, jai radha kunja bihari. And very little results. Prabhupada was very much result-oriented. You know, as much as we'd like to say, you know, don't be result-oriented, just love. All you need is love, love. All, you know that song?
Yeah.
Yeah. All you need is love, love. All you ever need is love. Anyway, as much as we'd like to sing that song, Prabhupada was very much result-oriented. And that was his mood. He would write letters to the temples that, you know, whoever does the most books, I'll come and stay there. Prabhupada would encourage us to have competition between each other. Book distribution, I remember that I was in charge of one temple. We beat Radha Damodar party in the early days, and Prabhupada was very happy. He said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj does not like to get defeated. Because Tamal Krishna Maharaj was really angry. And Prabhupada liked that. Prabhupada had a real competitive spirit. Actually, Prabhupada even said that when he was young, he played soccer. Did you know that? The devotees asked, what position did you play? Does anyone know the answer to that? He was goalie. Goalkeeper. You know, he guarded the goal. Because Prabhupada didn't want to run around. Yeah. Prabhupada explained that. I didn't want to run around. I just wanted to stay in one place. Because the goalie also runs from side to side, but not as much as the other people. So, you know, Prabhupada was very much result on, you know, how many devotees? How many devotees have you made? How many books have you distributed? That's not mundane. It's basically, you know, how many people are going back to Godhead? I mean, that's a pretty spiritual concept, isn't it? It's not like mundane that, you know, how much money do you make? But also Prabhupada was interested in money for the Krishna consciousness movement too. Because Prabhupada saw and understood the principle of yukta vairagya, that anything engaged in Krishna service retains or obtains its original spiritual quality. This is interesting because this actually reflects the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Beda Abeda Tattva. The dualists, this is very interesting. There's monism and dualism. Everybody's heard of those two terms? The monists think, you know, everything's spiritual, you know, everything's one, we're all God or something like that, you know. And the dualists think there's a vast difference between the material and spiritual energy, and it never the twain shall meet. In other words, that's it. This is material energy. And even you get some dualistic concepts that were even spoken by Sripad Madhvacharya, who's in our Sampradaya, of course, a prominent acharya, who said that there are some eternally conditioned souls who, you know, basically, for all intents and purposes, that's it, you know, they're going to stay here. And no hope. And anyway, so that's extreme dualism. But we don't accept extreme dualism or monism. We accept one and different simultaneously, which means that this energy of Krishna can be transformed by Krishna. It is not, in one sense, it's Krishna's separated, vina prakriti ashta. It's one sense, it's Krishna's separated energy. But because it's Krishna's energy, it can be spiritualized. And so when you use something in Krishna's service, under the direction of Krishna's representative, or directly under Krishna's direction, that energy becomes spiritualized. So this chair can become spiritualized. Or your body can become spiritualized. Like I was listening to one lecture this morning where Prabhupada said, you put an iron, typical example, you put an iron rod in fire and the iron rod becomes fire, right? So you put the body or you put something in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritualized. I mean, just like you have this nice display up there of Prabhupada's visa application for the United States, right? With Prabhupada's fingerprints, thumbprints and everything. You seen that?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that before. I was amazed. Where'd you get it from? Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, is there a way to get a copy of it? Yeah. How did you get it?
From Bhagavatam from Germany.
I should write to him because I should get a copy of it. But so here's a piece of paper, you know, some ink on it, stuff like that, and it becomes spiritualized. And you know, we put it up there and we meditate on it because it's Prabhupada's thumbprint or Prabhupada's footprints there. Hmm. we were just studying about the Muslim religion. They don't believe that that can happen. Therefore, they decry any form of imagery. You understand what I mean? They actually criticize any form of imagery. And they come into the temples in India and they have destroyed many deities. Because they don't think that something can be transformed from matter to spirit. So any other questions or comments? Yeah, Devarshi.
Just for information, like here, if you get to chai every day with one wife, you spend 27 years. Or if we chai with two wives daily, he spent 13,000.
Oh my God.
Years.
Well, maybe he either lived a long life or try it with, you know, 1,000 wives a day, you know. If he had 1,000 wives a day, he'd try with, how many years would that be? He had 10 million, but anyway.
10,000 years.
Oh, you're good with mathematics. Anyway, I don't know. These things happened in different yugas. People lived longer. You know, they had different abilities. All I know is he had 10 million wives. How he took care of them, I don't know. Can you imagine that? In Kali Yuga, one's considered a great hero if he can take care of one wife. Yeah. 50, where?
In Bosnia.
In Bosnia. He's Muslim. But Muhammad actually prohibited people from having that many wives. Oh. Because Muhammad actually said, limited people to 4 wives, right? He had more. But he limited people to 4. So Prabhupada said, I mean, if you're going to talk about co-wives, any of you were interested. Or co-husbands. Yeah.
I just recently watched the movie which Johnny Vaz gave me about the history of Islam.
Yeah.
And when you see the history, then you understand what's the problem. Because they treated ladies as subordinate.
Slaves.
Like slaves. That, and Muhammad was like a prophet who claimed that they are equal, actually. So that's,
yeah.
That's the background of all this.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, I actually some stories about that. Muhammad himself had, I think, like 80 to 100 wives, but the reason was for political reasons. He wanted to bring, that's not shown in the movie, I'm sure. But the history is that Muhammad wanted to bring different tribes under his control. So the system in those days was that you would marry the princess of that particular tribe to make an alliance. So after Muhammad's first wife died, did they show that in that movie?
No.
So they won't show that. Which movie was that?
With Anthony Quinn.
What?
With Anthony Quinn. Calling.
Oh yeah, I saw that movie. That's when they didn't show Muhammad's face. They never do.
Yeah.
What? There's other movies, yeah. But what happened is that Muhammad was, I mean, I guess I'll tell the story. Some of you heard it when I at the camp. But Muhammad fell in love with a lady that was 20 years older than him. That's not shown in the movie. And she was a very rich lady because she had been married before. And her husband had been in charge of all the caravans, many caravans. So Muhammad became very wealthy, but he was in love with her. There's many love poems that he wrote to her. This is very romantic for you ladies. You should get a hold of these love poems. Anyway, so he wrote many love poems to her. And what happened is because she was 20 years older than him, she died before him. And then he became extremely wealthy. He was in Medina at that time, not Mecca. And he became extremely wealthy, and then to get the support of all the tribes, he married princesses from the major tribes in the Saudi Arabian area. Then he became so powerful that from Mecca, they got upset and they went to attack him. You saw that. That was in the movie. That was in the movie. And then he defeated the Meccan army, even though they were outnumbered tremendously. Muhammad was outnumbered. And then later on, he marched into Mecca unopposed, went into the Kaaba, which is the house of Abraham, and smashed all these deities there, or, you know, statues. There were 360 statues in that house. Anyway, so his marriage, or marriages, had a political purpose to them. There's this other story. Anyway, I don't want to tell all these stories. Anyway. Of 1001 Arabian Nights. You all know that story? Scheherazade? No, of course. I'm not going to tell that story.
Lambo made a theater play out of this story.
Really?
And presented like 3 months of material nature.
Oh, really? That's nice. So that's a famous story of a man.
Barbara was playing the main female role.
Really? Scheherazade. She was telling the stories. So that was the story of a man who wanted to marry many wives, but not all at the same time. You know the story? No. He killed each one after the night was over. And she kept alive, herself alive, by telling stories. So, anyway. So much for that. So, any... Yeah. Yeah.
And that child was really active, very active.
Yeah.
So after some time, the devotee said to him, now we will play this game. We will, because he was really tired, we will lay on the floor, and who for a long time remains peaceful without moving, he's the
winner of the game.
And after 1 hour, the devotee slept. He fell asleep. And after 1 hour, he just waking up, and he asked, what's the time? And that kid said, I won.
So that's a good play for your parents. A good competition. Okay. I think that's enough for today. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to the Prabhupada.